think goalie is the difference maker, and I definitely want to be the guy who helps the team win and do whatever it takes to get there.
It's time for Blackhawk 720, your insider key to the Hawks.
Cousins in the right circle, he shoots, and Blankenen down with a butterfly save.
Take the Blackhawks to go.
Long shot, turned wide, loose puck, scramble in the crease. A follow-up shot there by Luke Cunning, and Blankenen got a piece of that, knocking it wide.
Blackhawk 720, the only Hawks podcast worth listening to.
Just great save by Blankenen in that series. That was a good sequence of saves.
Now, here's Chris Bowden and Joe Brand, podcast royalty.
Hi again, everyone. Another week, another Blackhawk 720 podcast. I'm Chris Bowden, your pre- and post-game host on WGN Radio for Blackhawks hockey, joined by Joe Brand, normally our Blackhawks reporter, but now wearing many other hats, as has been well established here over the course of the past few weeks. And back by popular demand, we are back in Joe's Pilsen pad here, along with our feline friend as well, Plankton. And we were complimenting you about last week about the coziness and the convenience coming over here from Fifth Third Arena, where the Blackhawks practice, and also the convenience of not having to pay 30-plus bucks to park over at WGN. But then I forgot all about, somehow I forgot about, a 10-12-inch snowstorm that just happened over the weekend, and the challenge of finding street parking, even in Pilsen, where you don't have to pop quarters into your credit card everywhere. But lo and behold, I did find a spot that I think I'd be able to get out of across the street here, even though it is rather slushy. It's 7-Eleven-ish, where, you know, you have a craving for a nice cold, icy drink.
Yeah, well, hopefully you don't come down to your car being covered in tickets or just totally wall-to-wall with
And that's
with
our podcast,
snow.
Everybody. Gotta go.
Yeah, on the run. No, again, I should have put out the lawn chairs and had a spot for you via dibs, but I had a little trouble parking coming back from work earlier this morning, so that's the first thing I thought of, just roaming around here trying to find a spot. But this is the sweet time. This is the sweet spot of the perfect window to find an open spot, because either people are just leaving for their evening shifts or they haven't gotten back from work yet, so this is always a good time to find a good spot.
Okay, all right, I'll buy that. And Blackhawks coming off a 3-1 victory over Columbus. Good thing we've been doing these on Mondays the last couple of weeks, because they've been impressive outings on Sundays. But first of all, a couple other business points of business to take care of. Right after we introduced you to Plankton last week on Monday, and talking about how Plankton wanted us to have more on Alex DeBrincat, right after we put the podcast out, the COVID list begins, and the Blackhawks have now had 5 players go on the COVID list, starting with the Cat, and then Adam Boqvist, followed by Lucas Walmark, and then over the weekend it was Ryan Carpenter and Nicholas Beaudin. So this is another curveball, that another choppy bit of ice that the Blackhawks are having to deal with, and walking in, Plankton is not happy that he hasn't been able to see the Cat play for the past week, and neither are Blackhawk fans, I don't think, either.
No, but you know what? What Blackhawks fans should be positive about is the way that this team has responded. I know Jeremy Colliton wasn't too thrilled about that first effort against Nashville, but take a look at it, 4 games, 4 points. I mean, you pretty much will take that for what type of hurdles the Blackhawks have already had to overcome heading into this year, and then not to even mention the guys that they lose due to COVID protocol. I mean, there are so many things that the Blackhawks have had to overcome this year, but yet here we are with another week able to pull so many positives from this team. And no, it's not perfect. No, there's definitely a lot of things that can be changed, fixed, or altered. But for the most part, there's a lot of things to still be excited about the future of this team rather than just the last couple of games, even though that has been very promising. And a lot of the names are the same, but some of them are different. And it's just all of this is starting to really make sense, at least at this early portion of the year. All the decisions in the offseason that were made by the front office and by Jeremy Colliton, they are really seeming to pay off at the early going. And I think if that doesn't happen at the beginning of the year, it's harder to get to that point midway through the year. But the fact that they're getting off on this foot, it kind of just sets the standard, sets the bar a little bit higher for the rest of this year. And I'm not even talking about playoffs or more points. It's just things to pull from positively from each game. And that's been a really good reoccurring theme over the last few days.
And we'll hear from Jeremy Colliton following Sunday night's win in just a moment, because there are certainly some new faces individually to talk about here, even more so over the course of the past week. As you might expect, after facing Detroit and putting up a sixth spot last Sunday, the offense has dried out. When you lose Boqvist and DeBrincat right off the bat, and then some other guys, particularly not necessarily known for their offense, but you pile those two guys on top of who already has been missing. Going into Sunday's game, they had scored just four goals in the first three games of the week, the two in Nashville and then the 2-1 loss on Friday to Columbus. But for all the talk of lack of five-on-five offense, they put three goals together on Sunday night, and that was good enough for a victory. And the other thing is, after allowing five goals apiece in each of the first four games, since then, the Blackhawks have allowed a total of 10 goals in the last six games. Two of those have been on the power play, and that is just another indication. Let's face it, you know, playoffs, you know, that's still in dream world, I think, for this team. You know, unless something should happen to come together extremely quickly and very unlikely. But I think there's the way this team has played lately, it's maybe until they get a Boqvist and a DeBrincat back, it's going to be a whole lot less sexy offensively. But the way they've been able to execute and stay in games, I almost think there's kind of an attractive blue collarness to this team right now. And, you know, as we learn some of these kids and we see them potentially grow into roles, you can see them fill out in the future. You know, Troy and I and John were talking about it in these two games against Columbus. And granted, there were some ugly stretches in those two games against Nashville, but they found a way to hang in there and squeeze out 2 points. Is it ideal? Are you agreed? Do you want the second point? Of course you do, if you would have played a little bit better. But somehow they're managing games, finding a way. And we talked about this last week. Unlike the first four games of the season, unlike the previous 3 or 4 years, you're not seeing these long, deep, mad scrambles in their own end where they're just so frazzled and lost and don't know what to do. We're starting to see a system come together, and it's with these young kids who are buying in along with a couple of veterans who are leading the way.
Yeah, I think it's a few things, and I'm going to start with my theory that has been disproved heading into this year about the goalie situation with guys getting work nonstop when you're rotating through three different players, because that's just how it has to be with this schedule. Clearly, Kevin Lankinen has just come in and stolen the show, and I know we'll talk about him later, but that's kind of the theory now, I believe, with all these other young guys and the depth of this team right now. They know they're going to get an opportunity, and they know that they're going to be playing with some star players like Patrick Kane and Dominic Kubalik, and they're going to be able to interact with these Stanley Cup winning players like Kane and Shaw. Obviously, Kubalik hasn't won one, but they're going to get that experience, and they're also going to get the experience of playing with other guys that are in the same role as them, trying to make a name for themselves and trying to just show that they can be an important piece of the puzzle. Not the scorer, not the star on the ice that they need in that moment. So I think that's one aspect, and this is something you alluded to last week, the fact that Jeremy Colliton is finally in this situation that I think the Blackhawks front office really wanted him to be in, because this might be where he excels and where he shines a little bit more. Because when he was the Rockford head coach, it was all this talk about how great he works with these young players, how his mindset of the game works so well, and that's something they want to implement with the new with this Blackhawks team moving forward. And now he has that opportunity. Most of the guys on this team know him as Jeremy Colliton, head coach of the Blackhawks, not Jeremy Colliton, the guy that replaced Joel Quenneville. And it's not so much to say that these veterans may have been stubborn before or anything like that. I would never just jump to that conclusion. But I think the roles for the veterans have changed. And a lot of it changed when Jonathan Toews went down and when Kirby Dach went down. Now their role is to, yes, perform at their highest level, but also incorporate these young guys, maybe instill a little confidence with these guys. And you saw it with the goal by Kurashev, where Patrick Kane's just hanging down on the two-on-one rush, and he's there, and he's a huge part of that goal, because Janmark's thinking, okay, I'm going to give it to Patrick Kane because that's the best ideal situation right here for this goal opportunity. And Patrick Kane gives Philip Kurashev the shot, and it turns out to be the perfect right move. And I think that then that confidence can work both ways. And I know everything just seems so sunshine and rainbows because it is working right now, and I think the Blackhawks have exceeded expectations early on, but I don't think you can ignore that, and I think you have to give credit to both the coaching staff, the front office, and the roster that makes up this team right now because of it.
As we cue up Jeremy Colleton from Sunday's postgame, you know, he makes the reference here. To your point, we're starting to see now Jeremy's ability and what his reputation was, and I don't know if we were totally seeing that his first year and a half or so behind the bench, of managing young players, knowing when to push them, when to pull back, knowing that that consistency isn't always going to be there. And you'll hear here in these postgame comments about how, you know, Kurashev, given an opportunity early, looked good for a couple games, got quiet for a few, but then he saw something in Friday's game. Jeremy did, Kurashev did. So he promotes him to center, his natural position, on that line between Matthias Janmark, who I think has been really very quietly good this year, mm-hmm. along with Patrick Kane, and the hero we were talking about a week ago in Pugh Suter, who scored the hat trick against Detroit. His play between those two had fallen off a bit in the last couple of games. So now it's mixing and matching. And Pugh Suter in Sunday's game, the first 7 minutes before he scored, he was put on a line with Strome and Kubalik. Actually, I think it was with Soderberg and Schock. Let me correct myself there. And he had only seen the ice for one shift in that third period based on what Jeremy was seeing. Got out there again. All of a sudden, he just makes it what was a fairly smart play on his part because, you know, Elvis had left the crease for Columbus and then just flung the puck on net. And all of a sudden, Suter's, you know, the team's leading scorer, at least for a few minutes there in the game. So now we're seeing how Jeremy operates with some of these young players, knowing when to push, when to pull, noticing certain things in their game that may not be very evident to the normal fan's eye, but then, you know, taking note of it and then making an adjustment down the road. And we saw that with Kurashev on Sunday night. So let's hear from Jeremy talking a little bit more about Kurashev following that 3-1 victory against Columbus, and also the mental toughness of this team, plugging in and guys playing, many of them getting their first NHL opportunities because of this cloud of COVID that has taken five players off their roster on top of the injuries coming in. Also, you'll hear Jeremy discuss the confidence that Kevin Lankinen's performance is giving the team, how that's kind of seeping through the entire roster, and how, you know, less uptight the team may be in front of Lankinen, knowing they have a certain degree of confidence in the job he can do. But he starts out here talking about how it was another good Sunday performance, coming off a effort on Friday where he thought that they played very well and they just fell a little bit short.
They were really good on Friday, but you know, didn't get the result. If we could follow it up with a solid performance, an energetic performance, a smart performance, that we'd get rewarded with 2 points. If you don't do it, if you fall back into old habits and kind of get away from the habits that are going to help you win, then you don't get rewarded and you got to start over. So really happy with how we handled that challenge. You know, obviously we're missing a few guys, but there's no sympathy in the league. We've got to find a way to get it done anyway. And so ton of credit to that group in there. They really competed hard and did a lot of little things away from the puck. We were hard in puck battles when we needed to. Obviously, Lanks made some big saves for us, you know, a couple big kills for us, particularly at the end. So, you know, we got rewarded, but now we got to get back to work and follow it up with another good performance on Tuesday.
Hey, Jeremy. Kurashev has been not that impactful the past few games, but yet you promote him to the first line anyway, and it paid off very well. Do you feel like that's just a sort of the way you should handle things with the young guys to give them confidence and translate it into production like that?
Yeah, well, his play probably had dropped off a little bit. I thought the, you know, him and Strome and Kubi were, you know, very, very impactful for, you know, 3 or 4 games. And then the last couple, just not as much. But then I thought last game he showed a little life again. And so, you know, sometimes when you see that, you want to see if, you know, we can use that spark. I thought he finished the game really well on Friday. And, you know, just he makes a lot of plays. And I thought tonight his patience and confidence with the puck really helped that line. And they had a few more chances. He's a young guy, so it's not going to be – he's there now, and it might last a few games, and, we'll let it run. But it's going to be up and down with guys, and we're just going to try and help them through it. And I think we got a bunch of competition. We got a bunch of young players who are pushing for ice, and that's a great thing.
Hey, Jeremy, how impressed are you with the mentality of the group? I'm sure it could be so easy right now to look at the losses without Jonathan and Kirby and Alex and Brent even going into the year. And then you add on the five subtractions right now, these guys are still battling. What can you say about that?
Yeah, we've said it from the beginning of the year, right in training camp. We got to focus on getting better all the time. And, the outside impression of us as a team, it really doesn't matter. Our priority's got to be trying to get better, competing, be relentless, be determined, protect each other with our work ethic and our decisions. And they're doing it. And you got to give them, I think, a ton of credit. The older guy's leading the way, and the younger guy is playing without fear and coming in and being aggressive and being on their toes and seizing the opportunity that's there. And we are getting better. I mean, the results they're not perfect yet, but I think there's a lot to be excited about. And again, with so many young guys showing they're ready to at least get an opportunity, they're going to get a lot better here as the year goes on. And that looks really good for our team in the, weeks and months ahead.
Do you like what you're seeing out of the rookies that are sliding into the lineup? Obviously, Reese Johnson was the guy today.
Yeah, and that's what you need. You need guys to step in and play minutes for you. Like Reese, his work ethic, his skating, he hit everything that moved tonight. He had good habits. It helps the guys you're playing with. And, we really can't ask much more of our young guys. They're going to make mistakes. We know that, and it's up to us to help them through it. And sometimes they need to take a step back or play a little bit less, or their role needs to change from game to game. But when they can come in and do a really good job, it just lifts the team and gives us so much more depth and pace and push within our group. So, we're going to keep working with it.
Hey, Jeremy, Christian was probably on the outside looking in when he started up training camp. What's impressed you? What surprised you about him so far?
Yeah, no question. I did not expect him to come as quickly as he has. Again, seeing him in the summer camps, and then last year, obviously, watching him play in Rockford, and obviously he was getting better, and everyone was positive about him as a prospect down the line. But even just watching him play in Lugano, the pace of his game has really improved. And obviously we challenged him coming into camp, like, this is what you need to do if you want to compete for a spot, thinking that he would respond and improve. But he has, he's answered the bell, in every way, as far as, being quicker. He's a good skater, but it's one thing to be a good skater. It's another thing to play with pace and push and, transport the puck to the neutral zone and have pressure on the puck when he doesn't have it. He becomes easier to play with, and he's done a great job. So, it's early, and like I said, it's going to be ups and downs, but he's done a good job so far. We're proud of him.
Did you see any difference today with him at center, and any different responsibilities for him tonight?
Yeah, he's a natural center. I mean, I think to his credit, he's done a great job of adjusting to the wing. He's made some nice wall plays. He's been solid defensively, but it is an adjustment. Little things like getting in shot lanes, and just it's a different way to defend. But, his skating and his patience with the puck, his support on breakouts, his ability to get the puck to the neutral zone, it's a nice help at center. And I thought he's really good tonight. There's going to be little things that he needs to improve, and that's not a surprise, but it was a good, real good showing for his first game at center.
Jeremy, what do you have to say about the kind of maturity and headiness Suter showed on that goal that he had?
Yeah. The, first of all, pressure on the puck to force a turnover. And then that's what smart, intelligent players do. He knew that the goaltender was in a tough spot and he gave himself a chance. So that was a big goal for us, obviously. And I thought he got a little boost from it. I thought he got better in the third. I thought that line was good. You know, we put him with Soderberg and Shaw, and I thought that was they gave us some really good shifts in the third period.
We mentioned it every time Kevin started in goal, how well he plays. How much is that filtering down to the team? Because when you have somebody playing that well, doesn't that give a confidence to everybody around him?
No question. He's the way he makes the saves also is, you know, he looks under control. He's very good. You know, he covers up a rebound. Sometimes, you know, you're on the run a little bit and you give up a chance. Just the goaltender having the ability to freeze it and get you a face-off can help you settle down. And he does that. So, you know, it's day by day. He's got to keep working at it. It's he's building his body of work, but he's been a big help for us.
Jeremy Colliton sensing a lot of excitement and what he was observing with some of these guys. And let's keep in mind, Reese Johnson, who got his opportunity on Sunday night, and I think he ended up with 7 hits in 10 or 11 minutes of play. He was the 5th member of the Blackhawks this season to make his NHL debut, along with Suter, Kurashev, Lankinen, and Mitchell. So him admiring the grit of this group, along with the veterans meshing in with that. You talked about Kane and Key. I think they're getting a kick out of doing this. Even though this might not be the glory days of years gone by, they're finding some pleasure in getting a kick out of it. And after Monday's practice, we're recording after Monday's practice, Duncan Keith met the media too. And he was probably as giddy as I've ever seen him. You know, he's usually kind of lowbrow and, you know, Mr. Curmudgeon at times. But, you know, he was joking around a little bit with the media and seems pretty excited about a rejuvenation, about seeing the excitement in some of these young guys getting their first opportunity, and maybe even some of that nervous energy being passed along to some of the veteran guys too.
Well, again, it's a unique situation for all these veterans, whether they're cup winners or not, on this Blackhawks team, because rejuvenation is the perfect word. It's this whole new batch of players that are all trying to break in to the NHL on a consistent basis, and that's something that some of these veterans aren't used to. Yeah, a guy here or a guy there year after year, but it's always still been that winning cup or die mentality for the Blackhawks for the most part over the last few years. So this is a different situation, and honestly, I just feel like, and they should do this, they're just taking advantage of this situation. Again, it's unique. It's an opportunity to be a mentor. It's an opportunity to be a leader. And it's an opportunity to still have some fun without the full-on pressure of winning, because everyone understands the situation at hand right now. Jeremy Colliton referenced how he was pleased with his team on Friday, and if you keep up efforts like that, you're going to get 2 points. I thought Friday's game is the best way to lose for this team. And obviously that's easy to say when a team performs well and still comes up short, but you know, it's a close loss. The head coach is pleased with the effort. You don't get any points. So if you really want to talk about the tanking aspect, okay, that helps them in that regard, but it's not even about that. It's the fact that they're out shooting Columbus. They have more chances. They have more high danger chance. Like, things are working. Even though they didn't win the game, there's still so many things to pull from positively, but it only works that way if you follow it up the next day or the next game with that same effort, and that's exactly what they did, and that's exactly how they ended up winning. Now, granted, they got a little bit lucky because, like you said, Merzlikin's coming out of the crease twice, and the Blackhawks pounce on that opportunity, but, you know, you can only play the teams that you're scheduled against. You can only play that opponent how well they're doing at that time, and I thought they fully took advantage of it, and you saw a really pleased head coach. And kind of going back to the last thing we talked about, the fact that he's able to put Kurashev up to the top two lines or demote Pia Suter if he's struggling a little bit. They don't get that opportunity if Taves and Doc and DeBrinket is there available day after day on this team right now, or Alex Nylander for that matter. So again, I think they're all taking advantage of the situation and making the best of it right now.
Granted, ideally you'd want all four of those guys back.
Right,
you know,
of course.
Seeing what they can do. But because this is the situation that it is, You deal with it the best you can, and you squeeze as much as you can to find out about some of these young players. And one of those that you heard Jeremy raving about was Filip Kurashev. And again, this won't be a steady incline all season long. There will be dips and valleys, and then, you know, Kurashev's game will climb once again. And it's taken a step forward over the course of the last few games. And let's hear from Kurashev, kind of a quiet, subdued kind of kid from Switzerland, a fourth-round draft pick a couple of years ago, 21 years old. But he has definitely shown flashes, and this is a kid who probably still needs to fill out another, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 pounds or maybe a little bit more than that when he gains full maturity with his National Hockey League physique. But you'll hear him here again. This is a short snippet. Another short snippet we'll hear in a few minutes as well from Kevin Lankinen about what it was like playing with Patrick Kane. Gee, I wonder what he'll say about that. Also, the fact that, you know, he scored 3 goals here early on in his career. Right now on this team, that puts him in a tie for second or a tie for third if you count the two guys in with 4 apiece, Suter and Kane. And also about how he took the time, and the team wanted him to take the time for between the Edmonton bubble when he was traveling with the team just from an observatory standpoint and practicing, taking that time between whatever it was, the end of August, and then heading back over here in early to mid-December, going overseas to Switzerland to play for Lugano over there and working on the things that the team wanted to, and that was continue to move his feet, increase the pace in his game. Those were the things that he was instructed to do, and Jeremy Colleton and the entire hockey operations staff noticed a difference, and here Kurashev opens up talking about how he felt it was a difference for him, too, in terms of making himself a factor in this Blackhawks team once he got back into Chicago.
It's been great so far. I think this the time in Switzerland for sure helped me to come ready for camp here. And I think I got some momentum from playing there and got it over here. So it's been good so far.
What was the key for you with playing Kane tonight? What did you try to do with him?
You know, just try to, you know, have fun, I guess. You know, it's a... one of the best players ever, and it was really fun to play with him and try to help him. He helps me, so it was really fun tonight.
Yeah, just sort of building on that, it seemed like, you know, the past few games you hadn't been as involved as much, but then to get promoted to the first line anyway, is that sort of a feeling of confidence from the coaching staff that helped you have such a strong game tonight?
Yeah, it was great news that they put me on the first line today. You know, I just try to do my best. Whatever line they put me, doesn't really matter. I just go out there and try to help the team as much as I can.
Was it nice being at the center as well?
Yes. I kind of already got used to, but wing. But now back to center, so it feel great. I feel really comfortable there. And, hopefully I can keep going.
So, I'll ask you about the assist to Kane first. Could you believe that Lincoln was caught out of the net? Again, take us through that process of what you saw and what decision you decided to make.
Well, I just saw Merzlikins going out of the net. Just try to put some pressure. I got the lucky bounce and gave it to Kane, and he scored. Just try to put pressure on the forecheck, and we got a bounce there.
Did you expect to have this, you know, kind of offense that you've had so far this season?
I was hoping for it. Yes, last couple of games, you know, was a little bit less, but I think so far it's been good. I'm just trying to get better every day and, you know, keep helping the team as much as I can.
Kurashev, one of those guys, you know, along with Suter, depending on how the rest of this 56-game schedule plays out, along with a handful of other guys, whether it's, Reese Johnson or one of these handful of defensemen, where Blackhawks fans, I think, can start to see, when this team comes together again, hopefully in the fall when things are normal and you have a Kirby Dach back, you hopefully have a Jonathan Toews back. That takes a backseat to his overall health, of course. And then you make whatever more moves on top of the experience some of these young guys get. I think Blackhawks fans can start to see some of these pieces right now that are getting this experience and exposure being a part of – this team advancing and growing and becoming a contender again. It's pretty easy with some of these guys that have been the heroes or part heroes each of the last couple of Sundays offensively.
Yeah, and again, kind of going back to something we talked about earlier, the opportunity that these players have and that Jeremy Colleton have to sprinkle a Philip Kurashev on a Patrick Kane line and see how that works. I mean, how many times have we seen younger guys or new guys on this team work with Patrick Kane? And it's always kind of a hit or miss in terms of chemistry with him because he's always such a great guy to play with. He immediately makes his line mates better, but there's always that fear that they worry too much about getting the puck to Patrick Kane and letting him take things over. So when a guy clicks with Kane immediately, that's a good sign because it shows that he's got confidence in himself and he understands the game plan at hand. And so I think that's a huge sign. And not to mention the last week when we were talking about it, I mentioned how he's not really showing a fear to be crafty in front of the net. And we saw that twice on Sunday. I mean, he's in the right spot. He's crashing the net. He's not afraid to be there. He's not afraid to toughen up against guys, and he's just in the right spot at the right time. And the fact that he's aware about that right now, and he's, I don't want to say on the same page all the time as Kane, but he knows what Kane might be doing with the puck at that certain time. Again, small sample size, but for him to pick that up right away, I think that shows a good hockey IQ from that guy.
Pew Suter, you get on a line with Patrick Kane, you score a hat trick last Sunday. Philip Kurashev, you center for Patrick Kane this Sunday, and you get a goal and an assist in a 3-1 victory. And but the guy who remains the biggest young player spotlight, or has the youngest player spotlight on him, continues to be, simply based on performance time and again, is Kevin Lankinen. And you know, his buddy that he trains with, that he's known for 10 years, was the main reason the Blackhawks lost on Friday night, because they carried the play for much of that game on Friday night, only to lose 2-1. If it wasn't for Jonas Korpisalo on the other end of the ice, and you know, I'm sure Kevin Lankinen felt a little bummed that he wasn't able to maintain bragging rights over his buddy that he trains with in the off season, and they've known for 10 years. But if Korpisalo isn't in that end of the ice on the opposite side, the Blackhawks come away with a sweep. And you know, here we're talking about taking steps. I'm really going to be curious again to see what the Blackhawks, how they're going to play when they see Tampa again, or they're going to see Dallas for the first time. Now we're going to see Carolina for the first time. Carolina is without a couple of key players due to COVID, Teuvo Teravainen, one of them, and they have gotten off to, what, a 5-1 or 5-0-1 start. They're allowing only 2 goals a game. So now as they step up in class, 2 games against Carolina this week, 2 games against Dallas, and then, you know, I don't know whenever they face Tampa again. It's got to be sometime soon based on the schedule. You know, I want to see the body of work we started with was against Tampa, and how they'll look when they see them again is what I'm curious about. Against Nashville, you look at the Blackhawks roster in those 2 games against Nashville on paper versus the Predators, there's no reason they should be in that game. Columbus is a team, granted, not a lot of star power while they wait for Patrick Laine to join them, but nevertheless, a solid playoff team that knocked off Tampa Bay and gave them all a run for their money, knocked them off 2 years ago and gave them a run for their money this year, and now we get to see how they fare against a Carolina, a real stout defensive Carolina team. Yeah, I think goals are still going to be hard to come by, but I'm really curious to see the Hawks second time around, or you know, first time around against these higher caliber opponents, second time around against Tampa. That will be really a truer gauge for me. And the first time around against Tampa, they didn't have any Kevin Lankinen. They didn't know what Kevin Lankinen had for them. Now we have a better idea. Again, we're not going to stamp him the star goalie of the future, but he has certainly given every indication he ain't going to let go of it with the way he's performed these last 5 or 6 games.
The more he plays, the more I like him, and the more he talks, the more I like him. I just love this dude's confidence and his positivity. What did he say after Sunday's game? This is my time to rise. Like, who says that? Only a guy with full-on confidence, and the fact that he's backing it up,
too. Sounds like he's being a steel cage match somewhere.
Yeah, right?
But he says it very quietly.
Yeah, you know? Is he going to be in the next UFC fight? But and going back to his buddy Korpisalo, as you mentioned, he calls him positive, friendly guy. You can't not like him. And I think that just is totally gone to show what he brings to the mentality of this team when he comes on the ice. And I mean, even just the post-game interviews, it's a dude that is just fully aware of what he can bring to the table. He's got a ton of confidence in himself right now, and he's backing it up. And it's just the fact that it's all the fundamental things, too. It's not like he's always standing on his head and making these miraculous saves, but here we are saving him for pretty much the last topic of this podcast. Don't worry, we'll still have some content to get to, but that's the fact is he's just become all of a sudden this guy that, oh yeah, and by the way, the rookie goaltender is exceeding expectations at the NHL level. I mean, just the numbers alone, a goals against average over the first six games of under two, a save percentage of over .930. But the last five games, you take away his NHL debut, he's given up less than a goal and a half per game and a save percentage over .950. So again, maybe small sample size, but you really don't see how this guy can let up, or if he does, it's you're going to give him the benefit of the doubt to bounce back from it at least this year because of what he's able to do immediately and fundamentally.
And we should give a little shout out and impressed by the way Malcolm Subban responded in that game last week.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Because you know everyone was kind of their eyes kind of popped open when in that first of that back to back that Jeremy Collison gave Subban the net. Thinking, okay, Lankinen's on a roll. Let's give him the first game and see if we can get 2 points out of it. He gave Subban the net. Absolutely no reason, no fault of Subban that they didn't come away with a second point in that game against Nashville. So props to Malcolm there. But yeah, two or fewer goals in his last five games after that NHL debut. He has stopped 153 of 160 shots that he has faced. And there has to be a bad game here coming up somewhere. And how he responds to that, yeah. If that comes, the way his demeanor has been, what we've heard of him, what you'll hear from him now in just a second, leads me to believe that this guy isn't going to be crushed if he has one of those bad apple games. That he's going to be able to bounce back with the confidence factor that he is, and it just continues oozing out of him. And here after the 3-1 victory over Columbus on Sunday night, It was asked about where he still thinks he needs to improve. You'll hear him talk about that a little bit. And also the impressive numbers that he has put up so far, especially since that first NHL start. But here he begins by saying he's not very much at all fazed by the stage and the level of competition going up against the best players in the world.
I played a lot of years pro. I played pro in Finland for 4 years. Then I came over, played 2 years in Rockford. I think that's been a really good development for me, both on the ice and off the ice as well. I just feel like it's the right time for me to rise. You know, I've been waiting for this opportunity for a long time. I've been working extremely hard to one day get a crack at the NHL, and I've been lucky to get a few starts here, and obviously I want to make the most of it.
Kevin, we've talked about you facing different types of experiences and rising to the occasion. What would you say would be one or two of those kind of moments tonight? Perhaps, you know, that Texier breakaway opportunity, or would it be something else?
I would say that would be one of those. In a close game, you might give up a breakaway or just a puck might bounce and they might get a chance. So I think that's the part when the goalie needs to step up and make the save, and at the end of the day makes the difference. I think goalie is the difference maker, and I definitely want to be the guy who helps the team win and do whatever it takes to get there.
Sometimes when you find early success, you can get kind of caught up, but I'm sure you give yourself a critique. What would you say you still need to improve on?
I think I'm still, there's lots of stuff we have been working on with goalie coach Jimmy, just playing the puck behind the net, communicating with the D, just reading the play, when you're going to challenge, when you're going to be more laid back and just read the game. I think that's going to come eventually with more games. Obviously, you want to have good puck control. When they're throwing a lot of pucks at the net, you want to make those saves and keep the pucks in the corner if you can't control it. That's one thing, but also in general, just communicating with the D. I know we have a lot of new guys. I'm a new guy too, so I think it's going to only get better from here.
Is it surreal for you even a little bit, despite your confidence, how well it's gone? I mean, you're now seventh in the league in save percentage, I think. Did you have any idea it would be this good this immediately?
No, I mean, I'm just happy where we are right now. Obviously, with the win, it feels great. I think that was a big step for our team just to face some adversity and then come away with the win. But for me as well, I think a lot, every single game, every single period I'm out there, I just feel more relaxed. I gain more and more confidence. I don't really like to judge my game by the numbers that much because usually sometimes might happen, the numbers don't tell the whole truth. There's so much that goes in a hockey game, even with goalies. Sometimes you might made a mistake and that shows on the stats, but you might have made 30 or 40 good saves. And I just try to live in the moment and move day by day because I feel like I'm in a good groove and I just want to keep getting better and helping this team win.
I feel calm myself after much more calm myself after listening to Kevin Lankinen because he certainly talks that way with the media and is that way in net. And it is his certainly moving forward. That doesn't mean opportunity is going to be closed to everyone else. But here over the course of the next week, you have spaces in between games, days between games. As a matter of fact, a couple days between Thursday Carolina and then Sunday afternoon Dallas Stars. So he could be if he keeps performing this way, he could be the guy all week long. But I still think that that Jeremy Colleton would you know, give him a breather here and there, not put too much on his plate, hopefully keep him in a groove while, you know, seeing what the likes of a Subban or even a Delia will be, especially coming off, you know, sitting around watching Lankinen do what he does and perhaps building up a little rust. We know that Subban certainly took care of his business last week.
So with that, I want to pose this question to you and to Blackhawks fans. So I was thinking about this the other day. Obviously, Kevin Lankinen was basically option C that everyone thought was going to run forward with this goalie competition. And still in the early stages, but as of right now, he seems to be the guy. I wonder how different it is if the Hawks do figure out something with Corey Crawford in the offseason. Now, I know this is, okay, well, Corey Crawford's not playing. He retired, and it would be Kevin Lankinen as the third guy anyway. But I almost wonder, okay, you sign a one-year, two-year deal with Crawford, whatever. There's still a little bit more incentive or a little bit more drive or a little bit more pressure for this team to win. So if Crawford's out of the picture then, kind of late notice, like mm-hmm. he was with New Jersey, then it's, okay, now we got to rely on Subban or Delia. And we also got this Lankinen guy for some depth. Mm-hmm. Does he get a shot that early? Does he get to play so much so early on? Or are they worried? Obviously, if he comes out and he has the start that he's had this year, yeah, there's the incentive to keep playing him. But I almost wonder, okay, well, it's either got to be Subban or Delia because everything changed. The mantra kind of changed when they decided to go to do away with Corey Crawford. Right. It's okay, now we have to find the goaltender of the future. And we've got these three guys who possibly could be it. So I almost wonder, and you don't even have to answer because I know
if Lankinen would have been out of sight, out of mind if Corey would, Corey would have been re-signed.
Yes.
Probably, or I would think that it seemed to be a fairly level competition throughout training camp.
Okay.
So that's why Jeremy may have gone with the more experienced guys, be it not by much, but still knowing the potential of Lankinen. Now, then, you know, maybe whoever he gave that backup job, and granted, we'd be looking at three goaltenders if Corey was here too. If given their opportunities, you know, if they gave Corey his games and then whenever Subban got his or Delia got his and it wasn't impressive, you know, after a while, maybe they'd cycle Lankinen in there. I would have bet he would have started the season in Rockford unless he was absolutely lights out in training camp above those two others, which wasn't the case, you know, even without Corey. So I would imagine, yeah, maybe he would have stuck around, but the priorities would have been Subban and Delia behind Crawford. So, you know, this is another byproduct, pleasantly surprising byproduct of that anger so many people felt.
Right.
And let's be honest, it's not like Stan and Hockey Ops probably saw this coming to the degree that it has.
Right.
But you know, throwing it all out there, this is the season to do it. And
I fully agree.
This is the season to do it, to experiment. And then they had a couple other bad hands dealt them right before training camp started. So if you're not going to have fans, if you're going only 56, if you've already declared a rebuild, then this is the season to try and, you know, maybe take a step back in an effort to move forward more quickly and find out what some of these guys are about. And it is Kevin Lankin, it is example 1A in all yeah. of that and seeing what he can do amidst a bunch of other, you know, promising prospects.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't pose that question to try and prove a point. Like, one aspect of all the decision-making that has been made over the few months is 100% right, and the other side is 100% wrong, and anybody that criticized Stan Bowman should be, you know, having Kevin Lankinen shoved in their face right now to show how good he is. But again, these are tough decisions that front office members have to make, and as of right now, it seems to be the right decision, at least of the risk outweighing the reward, or the, like you said, the right opportunity to go forward with this. Like, it's not just the fact that Stan Bowman didn't want Corey Crawford anymore. He just assessed the whole situation, present and future, and it is a risk, and as of right now, it has paid off. So it's, I think it, that just needs to be known and that needs to be acknowledged, because the moment Corey Crawford isn't signed, it's, this is the worst move since insert move here. You know, it's just everything needs to be just taken back a little bit, seen at a wider view. And as of right now, again, there's a lot of years and a lot of hockey still to be played, and obviously a lot in front of Malcolm Subban, Colin Dealey, and Kevin Lankinen. But as of right now, it's basically validating why Stan Bowman had this thought, not even that decision, but that thought.
Small sample size and 46 games to go, you know, in this season, and things can change. But so far, based on what we've seen from some of these young players, it seems to be the right way to go. And then there is also the school of thought that if Corey had agreed, you know, Stan's maintained that the reason Corey isn't back is he didn't want to take a one-year deal. One-year deal would have been one thing. Corey wanted two, and that's where they decided to let him walk. Now, if Corey even decided to take the one-year deal here, if that's what was offered and the Hawks were willing to sign him for an agreeable amount, there's a school of thought by many observers and people I know that Corey wouldn't be retired right now because he was in Chicago, in familiar territory, mm-hmm. and being with a team that he was comfortable with.
That's why I posed the question, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, it could be a situation where Corey still would have been here to, you know, completely finish out his playing career. I personally think that would have been his preference, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing the landscape in New Jersey, meaning more than one thing, you know, it may have shocked the system and led him to that. But I don't know for sure. It could be something totally different than that. But I just have a gut feeling that if Corey was brought back even for 1 year, he'd be playing this year out. So, but we will never know unless he comes clean about it sometime. And I don't think Corey's going to be inclined to do that.
You know what? That'd be a great, great story. How about that?
Speaking of coming clean, as we wrap up here, how's 30? You had a birthday since our last podcast.
Yeah, I know, and it feels like it's been a 2 week birthday because people keep reminding me that I'm 30 years old. No, I know it's definitely a shock to me.
There's a lot of us out here who would love to be 30.
I know, and I'm trying to keep that in perspective. But yeah, I like I said on Facebook, I want my hand stamped so I can leave the 30 Club whenever I want. But no, I mean, I'm happy to have the opportunities I have, very happy with a lot of things going on in my life. So here we go. Here comes the next decade.
Onward and upward.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But happy for the people in my life and what's going on right now. So it was a great birthday. It really was.
Good. And this has been a year where it's hard to have birthdays.
Yeah.
And really
how
celebrate.
About?
And absorb them and appreciate them. So good on you for that. What do you say? I don't know, next Sunday or Monday we do this again. By that time, the Hawks will have played Carolina twice, see how they fare against a team that, as they come to town, has given up an average of 2 goals per game. which is now granted they're not, they do have some offensive firepower that they're missing, but
actually, it's even better. It's 1.67 goals against average, leading the league. So the Blackhawks offensively will be tested once again, see if there's ways they can generate against, you know, a team that's had a couple of impressive runs to the playoffs the last pair of seasons.
But they are without one of their goaltenders.
Yes,
right?
Yes. They just lost Peter Mrazek. Looks as though he'll need surgery. He and James Reimer were splitting the duties. They have been for the last couple of years. This is also a team that kills off more than 91% of the penalties coming to town. That's second in the NHL. And also second in the NHL, they only allow 23 shots per game. So this will be another measuring stick for the Blackhawks as they take on this this Carolina team that comes to town. And this is also a Hurricanes team that had been sitting out for a while because of all their COVID problems, and all they did was welcome a 4-0 Dallas team to their place once they get back into action, and they beat them twice, the team that went to the Stanley Cup final last year. So this is another test. Then the Blackhawks go see Dallas, and either after that Dallas two-gamer or maybe between games one and two, they have a Sunday afternoon game to open things up against Dallas. Maybe we'll sit down and do another podcast again. So, but again, we'll see. We'll see if the points can keep coming in one form or another, and we can continue to see these steps moving forward. Because, you know, I think from what people's expectations were from the outside looking in, and granted, 3-4-3, you know, they're not on their way to the Stanley Cup by any means. But I don't. I wonder if a lot of people would have expected 3-4-3, especially after we saw the first two or three games down in Florida.
I honestly wouldn't. I'll be right out front and say that right now. But again, I think it's the way that they've gotten to 3-4-3, the good and the bad. It's been an intriguing path. It's been very enlightening to see some players that we didn't expect to have the starts they've had. But I also think heading into this kind of a powerhouse set of matchups between Carolina and Dallas is going to be a good challenge for this team, and especially at the time that they're heading into it, because they're kind of riding high right now, or at least as high as this team can be. So it'll be a good challenge for them, and maybe they get humbled a little bit, but then how do they bounce back from that? And who knows? Maybe they come out firing on Tuesday night against Carolina, but I think it's a good challenge and a good opportune time for this team right now.
It's really the narrative of the entire season, just seeing how this team is able to grow and individually and from a group standpoint. So that's a wrap for this edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. We want to thank Ernie Skatten, our producer, Curtis Koch as well. I want to thank you for listening, encouraging you to subscribe all the time, so whenever we have a new one, it'll be right there waiting for you. In the meantime, Joe and I and WGN Sports will advertise when a new one is out there. Joe's at @Joe_Brand1 on Twitter. I'm at @BowdenTweets. But again, we encourage you to subscribe, and we appreciate your listenership. And for the 30-year-old Joe Brand and for the Chris Bowden, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.
How about that?
They won it!
The Hawks win the Stanley Cup!
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks 720 Podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter, @BowdenTweets, and @Joe_Brand1.
That was great!